Okay, good evening. Welcome everyone to the 529 Emergency Preparedness Discussion Net, courtesy of the WA7ABU 529 repeater. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. My name is Brett and I'm net control for today, March 9th, 2021. This net meets each Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. local time on 145.29 MHz.
This is the WA7ABU repeater.
And this is a designated emergency frequency, so a break if any real emergency occurs. Our alternate frequency is 145.19 with a tone of 100. We appreciate those who stand by and allow us to have a clear frequency for the next hour as we discuss emergency preparedness with particular emphasis on COVID-19 or bad storm or any other topics you'd like to do. But we'll go over some COVID-19 news. There's some new stuff on that. One of the CDC guidelines that we might want to talk about tonight. Anyway, all amateur operators are welcome to participate in the discussions during the net. When you check in, I'd like you to use your call sign slowly and phonetically, and also your name and location to be recognized by net control. See if there's anybody on EchoLink that would like to check in first for the emergency preparedness net. Come now, please. Okay, I don't hear anyone on EchoLink, so let's take general check-ins for the emergency preparedness net.
Good evening. This is Whiskey 7, Sierra Hotel Mike, Steve in Albany.
Hello, Brett. Whiskey Alpha 7, Alpha Bravo Uniform.
K6, Sierra Tango X-ray.
Kilo Echo 7, Papa Charlie Zulu, Jerry and Kaiser.
Kilo 5, Charlie, Papa Charlie, Mike in Happy Valley.
Hi Brett, Whiskey Alpha 7, Hotel Sierra Bravo, Jerry, South Salem on an HT.
Good evening. This is Kilo Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, Art and Canby.
Okay, there's a pause, so let's go through that. That was Art, Kilo Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango. Before that was Jerry, Whiskey Alpha 7, Hotel Sierra Bravo. Mike, Kilo 5, Charlie, Papa, Charlie. Jerry, Kilo Echo 7, Papa, Charlie, Zulu. Then a couple of Dan's here. Kilo 6, Sierra Tango X-ray. And Whiskey Alpha 7, Alpha Bravo Uniform. And Steve started us off from Albany there. Whiskey 7, Sierra Hotel Mike. Thanks for checking in. Anybody else? Okay, this is the emergency preparedness net on 529, where you're taking check-ins.
Kilo Foxtrot 7, Bravo Uniform Victor, Walton Woodburn.
This is Kilo Juliet 7 Tango Bravo Whiskey, Bill and Newberg. I'm hoping making it through to the repeater.
Kilo Echo 7 Oscar Lima Uniform Paul Northeast Salem.
Kilo Juliet 7 Tango Bravo Whiskey. And there's Walt, Kilo Foxtrot 7 Bravo Uniform Victor. Thank you both for checking in. Anybody else for emergency preparedness net?
Kilo Echo
Echo 7, Oscar Lima, Uniform Paul, Northeast Salem.
Okay, there's Paul, Kilo Echo 7, Oscar Lima, Uniform. Let's see, 11 of us. Let's take a few more check-ins for the emergency prep net. Okay, well, that may be who we have right now. So maybe if we switch over and do some announcements for the net, we'll give people time to show up here. Does anybody have any announcements for the net they'd like to bring up? Come now, please.
Little reminder for tomorrow, Brad.
Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, I'd like to let you know tomorrow is evening we run slow scan. So it's 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Get all your equipment ready and participate sending pictures. We don't really decide what kind of picture to send, just anything in good taste. And we have pictures that people think are funny and family pictures and all kinds of things. So join us for the net. The variety is what makes it fun. We've had pretty good participation the last few months, and we'd sure like to see that continue. Back to you, Brett, WA7ABU.
Okay, very good. Yeah, so again, slow scan TV net is at 7 instead of 8 if you aren't up on that. But I think they're still having fun with that. Were there any other announcements that people had for the net? Okay, well, very good. Well, I won't bore you with all the different nets that we have, but I did want to mention that if we have a new net on Friday, which is the aerospace net, I think that's what we called it, 7 o'clock on Friday on the 529 repeater. So anyway, that was did a try last week and talked about the Mars exploration, Mars rovers. And, oh, this is kind of cool. Sorry, this is kind of funny because, as you might know, we actually do a lot of balloon tracking every day. There's two balloons that are released every day from Salem. They go at 3 o'clock in the morning and they go at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So the one today that took off from Salem, it came down in Sandy, Oregon. And so, you know, I was disappointed because I had to do the net tonight, and it's, you know, it's an hour and a half drive, it's like 72 miles to Sandy, Oregon. So I got on QRZ, and I looked up. There's a feature on there called the grid map, the Explorer Ham Grid map, it's called. And so I looked at I looked in the area at that grid square, and it shows you there's some hams there. And I thought, well, let's look around and see if I know anybody. I didn't know anybody that checked into my net, but I found one of the hams that was nearest to where the balloon was predicted to land, and I found his Gmail account on QRZ. I sent him a Gmail, and I said, hey, a balloon seems to have landed near you. And I emailed him tonight, and I just got emailed back and said, this is from November 7, Tango, November 7, Tango, November, Papa, Sean. And he wrote back, it happened to land in my yard. So he got it. It landed in his yard. I managed to email him. That's not a normal announcement, but kind of fun. KG7, GGB. Okay, this is emergency preparedness set. We're taking some check-ins.
Yeah, good evening, Brett. Whiskey 7, Charlie, Charlie, Mike, Bruce, and Dundee.
Well, hello, Bruce. There's Whiskey 7, Charlie, Charlie, Mike. We were just talking about your net. Do you have another topic that you want to announce for that? Or what's the plan for your Friday night net there? Do you have a topic in mind?
Yes, I do, Brett. We're going to take up something fairly weighty. I'd like to discuss black holes. So stand by for an edifying discussion of black holes and general relativity. I hope you find this of some interest. W7CCM.
Okay, there you have it. So show up at 7 o'clock on Friday and talk about black holes. That's great. Okay, neat stuff. All right, are there any other check-ins for the emergency preparedness net? Okay, don't hear anybody. All right, well, let's get going then, I guess. Let me pull up my... So we're going to talk about COVID, okay? Fun stuff. All right. So basically, numbers for Oregon right now. We're not doing too bad. Our daily average cases per day is 281 new cases per day. We have 134 hospitalizations. This is statewide. They have administered 1,179,506 vaccine doses. That represents 17.8% of Oregonians with one dose and 10.1% who are fully vaccinated. So that's good. We'll be talking about what it means to be fully vaccinated in just a minute as we discuss the new CDC guidelines for people who are fully vaccinated. But, again, the thing I'm kind of looking at overall is, you know, overall numbers for the United States and, you know, looking at those hospitalizations, because that's the one that really reflects kind of what's happening in the background, because it seems that there is a constant rate of people who, you know, get sick, end up in the hospital. So if that number stays down, we're doing good. If that number rises, then things are moving up again. Now, we are concerned because in, you know, the... cases. There's a couple concerns. One is that as people are relaxing standards, all of a sudden you'll notice that everybody's saying, oh, let's open the restaurants and let's open the gyms and let's send the kids back to school and let's do a variety of different things. Texas has said, we don't need to. I'm not going to tell you to wear a mask anymore. There's a relaxation of the measure that we have, it's always a concern that we're going to bounce back. And that's, again, what sort of happened at the Christmas time and New Year's, where people thought, I'm just going to go travel and do things, you know. Now, the risk is right now that in addition to the numbers are down, okay, and perhaps that's a result of, weather getting a little better, people spending more time outdoors, or maybe it's a reaction to people, you know, reacting to the fact that we had really high numbers and we... Timed it out there. Sorry about that, KG7 GDB. Anyway, so we don't know why the numbers are down, but, you know, if you look at the trend, again, we kind of... watching to see if the numbers go up, and number of the hospitalizations follow the infections by about 2 weeks, so it's a little steadier. The numbers of cases can be influenced by the number of tests that are done. So if you only, again, in Oregon, we only test people who have symptoms, you know, we could miss people. If we, you know, so in terms of what we what we're doing in Oregon right now, in terms of our testing, let me get this back to this. Yeah, so our daily positive test rate is about 3.9%, which is good, better than it was. But our daily new cases are 492. But, you know, our testing is at the level, it's at about 12,599 tests. And so, at any rate, that's down from what it was. Oh, it's coming back up again. So, again, the daily testing can affect the case numbers, okay? The daily testing doesn't affect the hospital numbers, so we always look at that. The vaccine, let me get a drip here. Vaccine numbers say that we've done, you know, 8,760 vaccines yesterday on the 8th. You know, weekly average, it says 15,000. You know, it's like 12,800, but, you know, previous days we had as many as 25,000 on March 5th. So each one of these vaccination sort of graphs that you look at has spikes, ups and downs, and it's not clear as to, you know, what's happening or why that is the case. So, anyway, the previous dip they blamed on the ice storms and things, but we're back through that now, and so we should be getting back to the dosing people again on the vaccine. So again, looking for those trends, are we, you know, so if people are still getting increases in cases, those people who have not been vaccinated, the worry is of these new variants. Okay. So the Great Britain variant is probably going to end up being the more dominant form of COVID that is out there. But we don't do a lot of testing in the United States. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head. We could look that up. But when we test someone who's positive, usually, you know, we're testing someone who believes they have some symptoms. And, you know, some of those people, they're starting to say, well, let's look and see what strain they have. And there seems to be variants that come from California, then there's some that, you know, that one from Britain, there's one from Brazil, and there's one from the South Africa, all of which have made the news, okay? And the reason why we're a little concerned about that is that these variants didn't really exist when we started the vaccine trials, okay? So by the time we had approved the vaccines, you know, it really had been tested on the previous version. Which they, you know, wasn't the original Chinese variant, but you'd call it the European variant. But, so anyway, variants are happening. And the more longer it lasts, the more people get infections, you know, the more the virus mutates and the more variants you have. And the British variant is more infective, more transmissible, and it seems to be a little bit more likely to make you sicker. Okay? So that's what we're concerned about. And if it's we didn't really test against it, we don't know how effective the vaccine would really be. Okay, so, anyway, in that light of that, you know, this is sort of a competition between how fast can we get people vaccinated before, you know, the variants get a chance to get a toehold and make the vaccine less effective. Now, you know, there's no... Well, there's not enough numbers now to tell you exactly what is what. There are some, remember when they set these trials up, they're looking for efficacy. Now, once again, you'll see this word efficacy and effectiveness sort of interchangeably, but they're not interchangeable. So let me just explain again what the vaccines were set up to do, and so you can understand, you know, how they do that. And how the ones that they've approved, you know, do what, you know, they were approved because, or authorized, they say, not exactly approved, a different word, authorized for emergency use, okay? So remember, if, you know, you give a whole bunch of people, 30,000 people, you know, half of those people get the vaccine, half those people get a saline shot, placebo, and you wait for people to get sick. Okay, and you get enough people who are sick, a couple hundred people or so that get sick, and then you you test them for COVID-19, and you find out what's the difference between the, if you test positive for COVID-19, you really are sick with it. Now, let's, you know, investigators don't know who that is. They look them up, and they say, oh, you know, look at here. Most of the people who are sick actually did not get the vaccine. They got a saline shot. And only a few of these people who got sick got the actual vaccine. But this is important to remember. They still had people get sick on the vaccine, okay? But it was, so that's called efficacy. They compare the numbers, and they come up with a percentage, and they say, whatever it is, 77% effective efficacy, or they say, you know, 90% efficacy. It's just a comparison of those two groups that got sick, the proportion of people who got sick, comparing vaccine versus no vaccine, okay? Now, what we really want to know about is we want to know about effectiveness. And effectiveness we learn after we've vaccinated the population. Now, the most important stuff that's coming out on effectiveness is right now is coming out of Israel, where they've done about half of their population. Remember, Israel is a little country that's about the size of New Jersey, with a similar size population, about 9 million people. And they have vaccinated a large number of their people. And they got everybody yet, but they're getting there. And they're starting to show us that they have a national health system and everybody, they can kind of keep track of people. And so they'll give us some real-world numbers about, you know, how effective the drug is in the population. What we really want to know is, you know, does it prevent people from dying? Does it, prevent people from getting really sick? And the efficacy, you know, trials also, when we look at the people, you know, nobody died that got the vaccine. Okay, so that's good in all the vaccines. So the thought is it will protect you from dying. Very few people went to the hospital that got the vaccine. There were some. So that's good. It's much better, you know, that, so the vaccine, they conclude, you know, protects you from getting, you know, a serious illness, going to the hospital, and dying. Okay, that's a reasonable conclusion on all the vaccines. We've got to stop here and see if anybody else has any questions or wants to check in at this time for the emergency preparedness now.
CPC.
They all have a question. K6SPX.
Okay, yeah, I'll take Mike first, and then we'll do the CX Dan.
Yeah, why in the world? I saw on the news tonight 24% of the American people will not take the vaccine. What in the world is in their head?
Yeah, I don't have an answer for that one. No, it's sort of a rhetorical question, but it's hard to imagine. I've always tried to, starting with Dr. Sun, you know, we try to provide the science for you. What I'm going to tell you tonight, we're going to get to the recommendations from the CDC, that part of the reason that the CDC is doing the recommendations is to try to make sure that people are more attracted to the idea of getting the vaccine. They are seeing some pushback from people. And I don't have a good answer for you. There is still, you know, just like anything else, there's still misinformation, and there's still anti-vaxxers, they're called, who don't like any vaccines, you know. And because these are new and it's easy to, you know, say something controversial and get some notice, you know, that it leads to misinformation, and then people, you know, doubt what's happening, okay? So, anyway, there's, you know, I'm not going to go through all the variety of reasons, but it is, it's still a kind of a large number there that you wouldn't think very many people would be objecting to it. Okay, let me move over to Dan here, STX. What's your question?
Well, on Thursday, last Thursday, I got my first shot. And one of the things that they don't tell you about, you know, are the side effects. Anyhow, either I'm not very healthy or something, but I've gone into atrial fibrillation. And I mean serious, because it's gotten me dizzy, and my heartbeat is jumping all over the place. In fact, it's about every three beats, every two beats, it skips a beat, which makes you dizzy, makes you lethargic, makes you, like, whatever. So, I called a cardiologist today, asked him about that, and they said, well, yeah, that is one of the side effects, and you just got to tough it out. And it might take, like, 2 weeks before you recover. Well, I'll tell you, the more that happens, the more worried I get. Of course, the more worried I get, probably the more that I'm like in a catch-22. I'm in a circle here. But anyway, I'll throw this thing. Ask the doctor, what does she think? There might be a way. Is there a way? What do you think? About maybe getting the atrial fibrillation to stop.
Yeah, I don't have access to her tonight, but I will ask her that question for you. But, you know, the thing is that if you normally have a cardiologist that is taking care of you, I guess that they're still in charge of whatever other medications you have. So you're good to report it, but did you actually get a call back from the physician, or did you, you know, I don't know, if you're not feeling good, you know, I would push for it, because it's atrial fibrillation is a symptom, and of course, you know, there's things that they can do for atrial fibrillation, whether they want to do it or not, because if they think it's really a side effect, but, you know, it's one of those conditions that they might at least want to, you know, change your blood thinners or something like that, because it's at risk for throwing clots if you're in atrial fibrillation too. So I don't know if I'm not trying to give you medical advice, but if that they should be managing whatever your cardiologist should realize that this is a new symptom that might need management, and I don't know what else you're doing, but push back if they, you know, just told you to tough it out, because if you're not, you know, it's worth getting a real answer, you know. That's just my advice. But I'll ask Dr. Sun too, and I'll let you know. Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo.
Well, I am on blood thinners, so they got me on something called Eliquis that was supposed to keep you from, I don't know, having a stroke or some silly thing. But anyway, I haven't felt like this in a long, long time, and it's kind of worrisome, I must say. But I've come out of it a couple of times, and I could tell immediately. You know, my head clears, and but it doesn't last very long. Like maybe only 10, 15 minutes, and then I'm right back at it again. As for the talk to the doctor, no. I got a call from a physician's assistant. And that's some gal, which I'm not sure she knew which one of the end it was up. But I did not really get to talk to the physician case like this yet.
Well, I'd be good to maybe get a follow-up in person. If you're not feeling well or it's getting more frequent, you know, then, you know, you might want to get an appointment to be seen. And since you've already had one of the vaccines, actually after 2 weeks, it'll be a little better, but you got the two-dose kind, right? So let me talk a little bit about the issue of being fully vaccinated here, because that has come up with these new guidelines, okay?
Yeah, the other question would be, is the second dose going to knock you harder or the same, or is it going to be better or not as bad?
I can just tell you, there's anecdotally, you know, that, and there's statistically, okay? So depending on which one you got, I think both the Moderna vaccine and the Pfizer one, I don't know which one you got, had more what they call reactogenicity. The people's reactions were generally stronger to the second one than the first one, and that kind of makes sense from a physiology standpoint because, you know, you're the first part, you're, you know, it takes a while to build up some immunity. You know, you're putting this stuff in that makes a foreign protein, and then your, you know, immune system reacts to it. And then when it sees that again, it goes, oh, my goodness, we're going to take care of this stuff right away. And so it, you know, the side effects usually of vaccination have to do with your systemic response to, you know, an infection, okay? It's kind of like it's gearing up. And say, hey, it doesn't know that this is just a harmless little protein that's part of a, you know, molecule that you might see in the future, and we want to protect against it. It just says, hey, this is bad stuff. You know, we got to do something about it. And, you know, you can get a variety of reactions. So people get fevers, and they get soreness. The most common thing is soreness. And sometimes it, you know, makes you have, you know, feel lousy, like you have the flu, okay? You know, I can tell you that when my daughter, who's a young person, got the second shot, she felt much worse the second time than the first time. You know, your mileage may vary. Other people said it didn't really bother them, at all, the first one or the second one. So, but I think in general, when I looked at Moderna and in Pfizer both, that they said there were more side effects on the second time than on the first time.
Yeah, that looks something to look forward to. Oh, wonderful. Well, I got Pfizer. That's the one I've got, K650.
Okay, well, again, that might be one reason why people don't want to get a vaccine, because they're worried about side effects. None of the side effects, the most serious side effects that people get are allergy-related side effects, and that seems to be, has to do with the ethylene glycol preservatives that are used in the Moderna and the Pfizer. And, you know, when they start looking at large numbers, I just saw a thing on that today in the email from University of Washington, the result was that they actually had quite a few people out of 50,000 employees who actually had an allergic reaction, you know, but it was still like 18 people that had had an actual, you know, anaphylaxis reaction that required treatment. But he says of those people who got that really strong, you know, response, that's like the worst thing that we see happen with the vaccines, you know, they had a history of, like 66% of them had a history of having, you know, strong reactions to vaccinations, and some number have also had a history of anaphylaxis, which is the shocking thing you get when you have a bad allergy. So, you know, in your allergy, if you're an allergy-prone person, yeah, you worry a little more about getting this vaccine, which is why they only give it under medical supervision. Okay, so let's talk about what it means to be fully vaccinated, because it's different on the, and it will goes to these new CDC guidelines. So, so I want to talk about the CDC on Tuesday released public health recommendations for fully vaccinated people, okay? And then they said, then they also have another article called The Science Brief Background relating to that announcement, so the background rationale. And then they have just a guideline page about when you've been fully vaccinated and what things that you should do and should not do. And that's I think, what I want to talk about a little bit more tonight, because there are reasons that the CDC does things, and they aren't always based on the, you know, the science decisions. You know, there's some social and political and public health aspects of public health that have to relate to people's attitudes and, you know, acceptability, you know, the people, you know, how compliant they are with your recommendations, how much they can put up with, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so those are considerations that public health people look at in addition to the scientific part, which is, hey, how does, you know, how do you give this stuff? What's the best way to do it? You know, does it work? That kind of thing. So the first thing we got to define is, you know, fully vaccinated, because these guidelines only apply to you if you're fully vaccinated. All right, so if you have the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine, you're not fully vaccinated until you've had 2 weeks after the second shot. That's the guidance there, okay? So that's the definition, okay? If you get the Johnson & Johnson, also called the Janssen vaccine, Janssen's part of Johnson & Johnson, so that sounds, you know, it's sometimes confusing. They'll say Janssen vaccine. This is Johnson & Johnson vaccine. That is a single-dose vaccine, and you are fully vaccinated 2 weeks after that injection, because it's a single-dose injection. So I double-checked this, because I thought that was, they checked them again at 28 days, and it didn't really seem to make any difference in the efficacy, whether you were at day 14 or whether you were at day 28. So that's good, okay? I mean, that will speed things up for people, if that those whom get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. So, yeah, you know, one dose is not of Moderna or Pfizer is not enough to fully vaccinate you. It partly protects you, but it's not. They decided when they did the trials and got the approval, or the authorization, was that, you know, they wanted to meet a certain standard, and it worked better at, you know, 28 days than it did, or 21 days after the 21-day shot, or the, you know, or the 28-day shot, 14 days later than it did after 2 weeks after the first shot. Okay, so they decided to go with the two-dose regimen. All right, we're sort of stuck with that. That's the science part. We're like, okay, this is the way we dosed it. This is how much we gave. This is the way we should test it and use it. Okay, so, all right, now, so you're fully vaccinated. For most people that I'd be, you know, talking to, has either gotten the Moderna or the Pfizer vaccine. So 2 weeks after the second dose, all right? So if you fit into that category, you are affected by the new CDC recommendations that just got released, which is what do you, you know, what can you do when you're fully vaccinated? Now, I kind of invite you to read this. It is from the CDC. There's links. Like, if you want me to put the link on, I can do this. Here's the deal, okay, just in general. All right, we've told you that, you know, they didn't really test these first two vaccines against the British variant or the South African variant or the Brazilian variant, okay? So they say preliminary evidence suggests, these are the science things, that they may provide some protection against a variety of strains, but it's actually not as good against the, you know, definitely not as good against the South African variant, okay? That's preliminary evidence, okay? That's not proven yet, but just, now that's the first thing that they say. Now, we do know that they are effective against COVID-19 and against severe disease. That we found out from just vaccinating lots of people, that yes, people that get the vaccine are not dying, they're not going to the hospital as much, and they're not getting very sick comparatively to the people that didn't get vaccinated, okay? So it protects you against getting sick and going really very sick and going to the hospital. Does it protect you against getting COVID-19? Not 100%. A small number of people get it, a mild case, okay? Or they might be asymptomatic, but we don't know if they are, because we didn't test for that, all right? And that's that little bit of knowledge there that we didn't do to authorize it. So we know that some people, some small number of people, get COVID-19 that have been vaccinated, but they don't get very sick. And we don't know how many people don't show symptoms who got the vaccine, okay? All right, so now, they say a growing body of evidence suggests that fully vaccinated people are less likely to have an asymptomatic infection and potentially less likely to transmit. However, further investigation is ongoing. Okay, well, that's really kind of the caveat there. You know, that's we don't know. There's a little bit of evidence from Israel right now on the Pfizer showing that it seems like the viral load, we talked about viral load before, viral load is kind of how sick you are and how much virus there is in your body. That makes you more infective, more likely to transmit. Okay, so they pretty much know that the more virus you have, the more you spew it out, the more transmissible it is. And the new Brazilian and British variants are seem to be more have a higher viral load in addition to having, you know, more spikes and things. So, you know, that's an issue. Okay. Now, in the meantime, we know that our preventative measures that we've talked about all along, the masks and the social distancing and hand washing, and most importantly, not hanging out in indoor spaces for long periods of time, you know, at close contact with poor ventilation, you know, those are the things that will, you know, that we know about already that work one way or the other to help you get prevent getting COVID-19. If you avoid those closed spaces and lots of social contact, some large numbers of people in a room, and you instead stay outdoors, wear your mask, you know, whenever you're near somebody, try to pop in and out of the store, get delivery, all those things, they work. Nobody denies they work. Okay, so the question then becomes, you know, do you want to relax the, you know, this is what they said, taking steps towards relaxing certain measures for vaccinated persons may help improve the vaccine acceptance and uptake. That's the thing that Mike is talking about here. Why aren't people, you know, all eager to get the vaccine? And so the thing is that the guidance, when you start reading it, it says, yes, they're kind of like, okay, all right, you know, The most obvious one is if you are friends with one other family, you know, and they have all been fully vaccinated, and they don't have contacts with anybody else, they're just, let's say it's just two retired couples. They like to get together, play cards, okay? They've both been fully vaccinated. They say you can meet indoors, you know, in your house with that person, don't have to wear a mask, don't have to, you know, do whatever you want with those people, okay? That one's probably the most, you know, acceptable one. That seems to make sense. However, can anyone think of, you know, they also say, well, you can go around people that haven't been vaccinated, that are members of your family. Like, you know, they give the example of a grandparent meeting, you know, going to their child or visit their grandchildren in their house or something. Now, here's the deal. This is one that's an odds thing, and this is where, yes, it would be really nice if you could do that, but I don't know that there's science that backs that part up, okay? Can anyone think of a reason why that would not really be based in science? I'm denying it that people would like that to be the case, but what would you worry about in terms of, you know, meeting with people who hadn't been, even if it was just like one family, who hadn't been vaccinated? What would be the risk? Kilo Golf, 7 Golf, Delta Bravo. Okay. All right. So let's think of the first one. Okay. We just said that you could get people who've been vaccinated, a small number of them still can get a mild infection. Okay. It's mild to you because you've been vaccinated. Doesn't mean, and it may be that you have less viral load if you took the Pfizer one, according to Israel, as a preliminary study. You might have less viral load, but you still have it, right? And so they could still get it from you. All right. And now remember, children, they're not going to get vaccinated. Only 16 years older and older can get, like, the Pfizer vaccine. Everything else is 18 and older. Children are not going to, you know, get the vaccine for a while. I've heard the term, you know, from, I think, Fauci, maybe 2022, we might have the children on vaccines. They are starting some vaccine trials with children. But children are not going to get the vaccine, all right? Now, what does that family do when they're not around you? Do they meet with other people? Do the children go to school? Do they, you know, have a social life with others? Maybe they're people who, you know, don't like wearing masks and, you know, they just believe it's all a bunch of BS and they just go about their day, you know? Well, you know, those people are going to, on that end, be exposed to others around them who might be carrying the new variants, okay? And they might get sick, and they might bring it to you, and that your vaccine may not be as effective, so you might get sicker or catch the new, you know, the new variant. You know, we don't know because the variants haven't been around long enough, but there, you see why that one isn't really based in science yet. We can't say, oh, well, here's the numbers. This is the risk. Okay, so you can read through these, but here's the deal. I mean, I talked to Dr. Sund about this today, you know, is that they say that, well, you can meet indoors. Now what she said is, look, if you know that the people that you're meeting with who have also been vaccinated really don't have any other contacts, that, you know, they don't spend time with other people in public who, you know, or their family members, you know, that haven't been vaccinated, then, you know, then that's probably pretty low risk for you to meet with a retired, you know, couple who haven't seen anybody. They, you know, get their groceries delivered. They wear masks whenever they go out. They don't hang out in restaurants. They stay away. They follow all the guidelines that you guys have been doing, because almost everybody listens to this net has, you know, been doing this stuff. Doing all that stuff, you know, then they're probably reasonably safe to be around that other vaccinated group, because, you know, they're not going to have a bad case, you're not going to have a bad case, and so you're good to go, right? So that's the one that probably is the most safe. Okay, however, you know, they say, well, you can, you know, you can meet with unvaccinated people from a single household who are at low risk for severe disease without wearing masks or physical distancing. I'm telling you that one we don't really know. Refrain, and also about quarantine and testing. Let me tell you about that real quick. It says you can refrain from quarantine and testing following a known exposure if asymptomatic. All right? So, again, that one's not based on any real facts. Okay? Why would you do that? We already know that it takes 4 to 5 days before you develop any symptoms at all, and, you know, after an exposure, and you might be infectious after 48 hours after exposure. So, you know, if I read this, I would say, well, you could have a reduced quarantine time until you make sure that you're past that 5-day mark where you might show some symptoms. They tell you if you have symptoms, all bets are off. You have to go back to this, really shouldn't be around anybody that, if you're having symptoms. You can't do that. You know, that does that make sense? Okay, so, you know, I'm just trying to go through the guidelines. So the quarantine rule is sort of a dumb one, you know. Again, that would be nice. It makes it less, you know, you say, oh, well, I can go back east and I can visit my grandkids. And, you know, I don't need quarantine. Even if I, you know, got exposed to, you know, people who might have had COVID, you know. That seems like you haven't waited. You've got to wait a little while, but they're saying don't wait at all. So I don't like that one very much. Okay? So, but here's the deal. How many people, like we said, how many people have gotten, like, and just take Oregon's example. I just told you, how many people have actually are fully vaccinated? It's only 10%. Okay, in Oregon right now. Okay? What about the other 90% of the people, right? It's going to take a long time before we get to the point where you encounter, you know, your odds of encountering someone else who randomly is 1 in 10, okay? So he said, oh, well, I could show up, you know, whatever, into a grocery store with my, you know, having been vaccinated or eating a restaurant. Well, no, 9 out of 10 of the people in that restaurant are not going to be vaccinated, you know, so that's a risk, right? Okay, so what I'm going to tell you, get to the bottom line here, and you can ask me some more questions, or we can forward more to, you know, Dr. Sun says she wants to wait 3 to 4 months before we relax our standards, okay? Now, why that much? Because at that point in time, if we're on track to do vaccinations like we've been doing, your odds are much, much more likely to encounter a vaccinated person in 3 or 4 months. We'll have the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is a one-shot one, so more people are going to get the vaccine, and that is better. That means that they're not likely to get sick from you, and you're not likely to get sick from them, hopefully. And the odds of encountering someone that's not vaccinated is much lower, okay? So 3 to 4 months. We also will know a little bit more of these answers to questions that we have. Like, you know, we might find out, you know, are these relaxed standards causing us to have more cases? That's the one I'm concerned about. We'll find that out soon enough. It only takes a little while to tell whether we're on an upward trend in the case numbers or hospitalizations. You know, these guys that, like in Texas, they stopped wearing masks, will their numbers go up? Now, we would probably say yes, based on previous experience. And the only thing we've done different is vaccinate 10% of the people. So is that enough to make any difference if everybody is relaxing their standards? It's confusing. You're adding more variables. You're increasing the risk at the same time. They don't balance each other. Does that make sense? So rather than, you know, kind of like study for the general exam and knowing which bands you can and can't operate on, you know, the better rule is basically, you know, just stick with what we've been doing. Even if you've been vaccinated, you can have peace of mind that you're not going to get sick or die from COVID after you've been vaccinated. That's good. And, you know, the odds are reduced that you're going to get like a little mild infection. But if you still wear your mask and you still stay away from people, you know, you're going to be good. You know, it's only when you're staying, you take your mask off and go indoors. You know, this is not the time to go back to the gym. I can tell you, none of the gym employees are going to be vaccinated because they're not medical. So, you know, and they're young. So it's going to be a while before the 22-year-old trainers are going to be vaccinated. And everybody else that's in the room that's breathing hard, you know, how many of them are going to be vaccinated? Again, there tend to be middle-aged people, and they may or may not be vaccinated. So, yeah, it's just a risk that you don't need to take.
Question, W7ABU.
Yes, Ben, go ahead.
What is the accepted point at which the Moderna second shot becomes at its maximum strength? Supposedly, by the time you get the second shot, you're already probably developing some immunity, but there comes a time they figure you're fully vaccinated. How many days is that after the second shot?
It's 14 days. So for both the Moderna, after the second shot, 14 days. That's the recommendation. That's the guideline. That one is based on science. Okay. So what they say is that for purposes of the guidance, people are considered fully vaccinated for COVID-19 greater than or equal 2 weeks after they've received the second dose in a two-dose series, Pfizer or Moderna. Okay. Or 2 weeks after they received a single dose of Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Okay? That applies to everyone who's been fully vaccinated. There's no exceptions. That's just the rule there.
comment again, WA7ABU.
Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
So the understanding I have is you can, after that two-week period, you could be around young people who have not had vaccination and have not proven anything because basically they figure that there's little danger involved overall. You're vaccinated, and if the kids try to pass something to you, then it probably won't be all that serious. But I have been informed by so many places now. I can't believe that it isn't true, that you can get a free test just about any time you want now. There's several different places that are offered. My doctor's office said all you have to do is let us know. We'll make it we'll set a time aside and we'll have you come in to run that test. And that was posted on the doctor's office today. And when I went by several different Rite Aids, I have seen signs that say, come in for your free COVID test. So I really think they're available, WA7ABU.
Okay, so this is the kind of thing, the testing idea, okay? This is a bit of the problem, is that we get these, in fact, just today. I'm just going to try to find the thing, the statistic here for you. Okay, so you know that there's been people who are, you know, traveling and they're having travel restrictions and having people test, okay? So here's what happened in a preliminary study from Hawaii, just reported in the University of Washington paper. So they had 279 people preparing for departure. All participants had a negative PCR test, not the little rapid one, but an actual PCR test 72 hours prior. Okay? Now, they got two people that actually were positive out of that, despite everybody testing 72 hours prior, did not. That says that corresponds to 7 cases per 1,000 travelers. And then they said that corresponds to an estimated 52 to 70 infected travelers arriving daily from November to December 2020 who supposedly had all had, you know, tested for COVID, okay? So it's a low number, but it's a real number, okay? When you start saying, okay, asymptomatic people, you know, they might get an infection. You know, they might really be infectious, all right? So that's the deal. So your odds, if you're around unvaccinated people, are, again, twofold. One, they might get sick from you if you have a very mild infection that might, you know, produce something, if you're around them long enough and they're in not masked. And they might be carrying one of the new variants that your vaccine is not quite as effective against. So you might get, you know, if you got exposed to one of those variants, it's possible that you would be sicker, you know. So there's a risk if being around unvaccinated people. So that's what we can't tell you is what that risk is. And the CDC says, well, okay, indoors in a small group, that would be okay. But I'm telling you, it doesn't really make much sense. They don't really actually have a study that says that. Okay, but again, they think that this is going to make people more likely to be happier, you know, more hopeful, you know, go on with their, feel like their lives are going on. Yes, your risk is small if you're with a small group of people, but it has to do with the odds of encountering, you know, someone who's sick, you know, in that group, or the odds of you passing on the illness. If you have any kind of symptoms at all when you go visit people, all bets are off, right? Or same thing with them, all right? Now, again, if anybody, they all say it very quickly, if you visit somebody who's unvaccinated,
has it, is at risk for disease, you know, then, yeah, they want you to wear the mask, you know, and they want you to stay away from them, like we've always been doing. All right? Now, multiple households, they say, you know, unvaccinated people, again, should be, stay away from each other, follow the social distancing, visit outdoors, same as normal. But they say all people, regardless of vaccination status, should still avoid large to medium gatherings, medium to large gatherings, indoors. And, you know, so, and then they say their travel recommendations are the same, whatever their travel recommendations are now. Basically shouldn't travel because that exposes yourself to variants. Okay? So you can read the guidelines and you can decide what you want, but I guess what I'm saying is the guidelines may have, they're kind of to entice people to feel a little bit better and a little more hopeful. It will get better, but right now the question is, you know, Dr. Sun says three to 4 months. You know, the risk is going to go down. Once you're vaccinated, you are personally can feel better that you're not going to get really sick and die from this. Okay, that's the good thing.
SHM with a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Steve, right? Go ahead.
Brett, do you know if there's a grace period between Moderna and Pfizer vaccines for between first and second shot? Or can you get it on the 25th day for Pfizer or the 30th day for Pfizer?
Yeah, I think that again, they want you to get it as soon as you can. It's not fixed in stone. If you can't get an appointment on exactly the 21st day, you want to get it as soon as you can. But probably not going to get to you early. And, you know, and then there were some questions about, we didn't really study what happens if you delay it. Now, I imagine, you know, look very carefully at the data, that probably wasn't exact in the trials. It would be nice to know what the range was. That would answer your question a little bit better. But as soon as you can get this after it's scheduled, if you can get the second dose, you'll probably have a more predictable, you know, response than waiting longer. Okay? But you still have to wait till after the second dose, 14 days, to get the full benefit of that shot. So it just is going to delay that point to where you're fully vaccinated. Did that answer your question?
Yes, it did. Thank you very much. W7SHN.
Okay, so again, I'm not trying to throw, you know, water on your hopes and all that, and that, you know, but does it make sense? That's why I talked a little bit more again about this to relax our standards, you know, when we only have 10% of the people vaccinated right now. You know, I'll feel better when we have 40% of the people vaccinated, right? I don't know when that will be, but it should be pretty soon. And that's the thing we're hoping for. And also, as more people, a couple more months pass, we'll have more effectiveness information on the vaccines. I'd like to know, again, the Johnson & Johnson looks like it has fewer side effects, you know, because and it's only one shot, right? So looking at the reports, there weren't any reports of allergic reactions to the Johnson & Johnson. It doesn't have the preservatives in it. And it's going to be, you know, nice because they don't require refrigeration. You keep, you know, it actually can stay at room temperature for a while and it'd be fine. You don't want to get hot, but, you know, it doesn't need to be frozen for months and months and months, just normal freezer. But it doesn't require the special handling that the Pfizer and Moderna ones do. You know, it has to be frozen and then thawed, and if it's not thawed, you're going to waste it if you don't give it all, and all these controversies about the logistics of giving this perishable drug, you know. So as more of that becomes available, that's going to make it easier and more likely to have your, you know, family doctor is going to have a dose for you there, and you won't have to, you know, have so many appointments and things to figure this all out. you know, that's it's just going to be a lot nicer. So waiting a little longer, yeah, it's got to get better. So I think that's the hopeful message, is that it's going to get better. Don't let down your guard just yet. If you do let down your guard, think about, okay, if you're with a person that you, yep, you know the people you're going to be with, you know. If they're people that you know, and they're fully vaccinated, and you know that they don't, you know, they follow the guidelines otherwise, they're very careful, they don't, you know, relax their standards, the chances are probably pretty low that you, you know, you get together with that person and, you know, have dinner, whatever, at a private residence, you know, with that group of people, okay, ride in a car, all right? But, go, you know, that depends. If the person's family is a bunch of anti-vaxxers and they, you know, they party all the time and things like that, they're still going to be exposed, and you still could get... Okay, so I'm just telling you that the odds are that as we start to beat down this virus, the odds of encountering someone who is infected, whether asymptomatic or not, with one of the new variants, if we can get more people vaccinated, that less likely we'll have those variants. Now, again, we'll know more about the variants and how effective it is. If people start to get sick, they really need to, you know, there's money in the new stimulus bill to do more testing. What they need to do is anybody who still gets sick that's been vaccinated, they ought to find out what the strain of the virus they have is. Because if it turns out that it's a particular strain that's getting around in an area, then that's when they're supposed to be making new vaccines as a booster shot that would be against the new strains. And that will prompt another dosing scheme. And that may be just the way it goes with it. But I think it's looking up, looking hopeful. I'd say don't relax your standards too soon. Anyway, it's after the hour here. Are there any final questions or comments on the subject, the emergency preparedness net? Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. Okay. Yeah, and once again, it's been a year. If you look at this, one of the Friday things, it's been a year since they declared it was a pandemic. You know, that took them a while before after they noticed that it was the problem, that they actually said this is a pandemic. But it was the one-year anniversary of the pandemic just this week here. So we've only been at it for a year. I already have vaccines, and people are starting to take them. And, right now we're on a downswing on the cases, and that's good. Hopefully it'll continue to be that way, and I'll just be hopeful. All right, so let's close the net here. Time is now 8:08 p.m., and this concludes the 529 Emergency Preparedness Net. Now, I think if Richard's around, he will have recorded this. We often put recordings on the WA7AViewGroups.io page. If you have questions that I didn't answer, or you thought of something that needs to go to Dr. Sun, you can send me an email at my call sign kilogolf7golfdeltabravo@arrl.net, and I'll make sure she gets it, and we'll get an answer for you. Anyway, this net meets each Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. on 145.29 megahertz. Our thanks go to Dan, WA7AVU, for the use of the repeater. Thanks to all who participated today and those who stood by to give us a clear channel. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, now closing the net at 8:09. We now return the repeater to normal, undirected amateur operations. KG7GDB, I am clear.